This week on The Pete Show, we're talking about children in care. Our project Handle With Care has been going on for the last few months. The idea is to try and help children who are in care now in Berkshire and people who've just come out of care to tell their stories and use creative arts to express themselves. Today, we're going to talk about how being in care affects how a child feels about his or her identity, sense of belonging. And I want to start with Jade's story. Jade's mum died when she was 14 years old, and as would often be the case, she was looked after by an aunt. But quite quickly, Jade and her twin brother were put into care. They had other siblings as well who didn't go into care, and you'll hear more about that in a second. After Jade's mum died, she began to question herself and lose faith and confidence in herself. It's easy to assume that going into care is an unpleasant experience. We were saying yesterday, kind of feel sorry for people in care, think of them as charity cases. For Jade, though, that's not the story. For Jade, it was the start of a much better life.
Well, when my mum died anyway, my family disowned me because they blamed me for her death. And it was just like a... It was a good thing, really, because it gave me a chance to get away from my family and make me spread my wings and do things I actually wanted to do instead of what my family wanted me to do.
Why did they blame you?
Because my mum had a heart attack, and they blamed me because they said that the heart attack was caused by stress, and they said that the only stress my mum had was the stress I was putting on her.
Tell me about going into foster care then. You've been handed over by your relatives to social services, and then you end up with another family being found for you to go and stay with. You remember turning up at the new place?
I did indeed. I was still 14 at the time. It was like, I think it was like a month after once my mum died. As I said, my auntie decided that she couldn't handle us, so she put us in foster care.
Tell me about meeting your foster parents for the first time though. What was that like?
It was all right. It was nervous, really. It was just like it wasn't really like they didn't want to take over from our family. They just wanted to be your friends where you can go and live and talk to them. And
you feel welcome?
I did. When I went to go and live with my foster carers, I felt alive for the first time than I have in a long time. I know it wasn't when my brother decided that it wasn't where he belonged, so he kept running away. But me, it wasn't where I belonged, but I'd rather prefer to be living in somewhere warm, with warm bed, with warm food in me, instead of staying in a shed or wherever he slept. So
I mean, the sort of circumstances, the environment was nice, because the house is nice and all of that.
I had a foster sister as well, and she treated me a lot better than my own sister treated me.
And what about that, you know, what sort of relationship were you able to build with your foster mum and dad? How does that work?
Well, you just sit there and get to know them first, and then they're just there to support you and guide you through the right path like your real parents are, really. You know what I mean? They just do it because they want to help young kids out instead of them going on the street, stealing and whatever. I know it doesn't always work that way, but they do their best at the end of the day. If the young kid don't want to sit there and put their hard work into it, the foster carer's not going to do it all. And I wanted to do it, and they was just more than welcome to sit there and help me and support me for it.
So, I mean, do you grow to love foster parents?
Well, it's hard for me to love, because everyone I've loved, I've lost. So I can't really sit there and say that I loved them. But I did that sometimes. Like, it took me a while, but I did actually get around to trusting them. And
that's interesting, isn't it? Because clearly, I mean, from the story you've told us, there's clearly lots of issues about your relationships with your own family members and trusting them. So to find people who, you know, have been total strangers who you could build trust in.
It did take me a while. It still does take me a while to sit there and trust people.
Really enjoyed meeting Jade. We're going to hear more of Jade's story in the next few minutes. What's it like then to end up in a new family with foster carers taking on the role of parents on behalf of the local council? What's it like to be a foster carer? I want to hear from you this morning if you have or do foster children. 0845 900 1041. And again, like yesterday, if you've grown up with foster parents, 0845 900 1041. Be interested to hear about your relationship with them, and also whether you had that sort of nagging desire to find out about your birth parents, to find out who you really are. Is that one of the things about growing up in care? You spend a lot of time wondering, well, who am I? Where do I belong? Where do I come from? I had dinner last night with a family in the Reading area who fostered 100 children, Steve, is that right? Not all at the same time, you know?
No, not all at the same time.
Over a long period of time, 100 kids you've had?
Yes, over the last 18 years, Andrew.
For what sort of durations of time?
We've had children in our care from maybe a couple of days to 2 years, 2.5 years at times. We're short-term carers, and they come into us, and we do our best for the children.
I mean, one thing that I've learnt by spending time with you and Vicky and with other foster carers in the area in recent weeks is that often people get into fostering because they were fostered themselves or because their own parents or relatives were foster parents. There's a whole kind of community of fostering, and once you're in it, you're in it, and you sort of, like, you know, carry it on yourself, which is exactly your story, isn't it? Your mum and dad did it.
Yeah, my mother and father have been fostering for about the last 32, 33 years. My wife had nothing to do with fostering, and she saw the difference it made my mother and father fostering, and we decided to go along that route as well, just to make a difference and try our best to help a child along the way.
And I can see that, because part of it is about it being normal to you, and part of it surely is about being exposed to the need. You've come into contact with kids who need to be looked after, who need to be away from their families for a period of time, and once you know about them, it must be quite hard to go, actually, not interested, I don't want to help them. How could you not want to help those two beautiful children that, you know, that you're looking after at the moment, who I met last night? Ben and Catherine, we're going to call them. They're not their real names, but Ben and Catherine. I love spending, you know, a couple of hours with, and you guys clearly loving looking after at the moment.
It is good fun. That Ben and Catherine have really come out of their show in the last couple of weeks, which is really nice to see. It's not, at the end of the day, their fault that they're in care. They've come to us because of issues, which obviously we can't talk about. And it's just fabulous to see them move up and come out of their shells and be more confident. They were really on form for you, Andrew, last night.
They were.
We got the worst out of them.
And they're still better behaving than my own kids. It's still hard, though, isn't it? Yeah, you're looking after children who need you or need someone, and you can invest some of the parenting skills you've developed over 100 kids into them and, you know, bring them out of themselves and give them a happy time and all of that. But for you and Vicky, it is hard. You know, how many times have you guys been up at 5 o'clock on a Sunday morning? Too many.
Yeah, I think Vicky mentioned last night that she's been up many a time. You know, we've had babies in care with us who need the 24-hour care. It does get tiring, but there are rewards at the end of it. It's...
What are they, though? Because that, I mean, put it into words for me. What are the rewards for fostering?
Just to get a family back on track, be it that a child goes on to adoption or goes back to their parents or a relative to live with them, to reintegrate them with their family. And it's just to make a happy family.
I suppose. I mean, but you know, you're talking about children who got issues, who sometimes come and bash your house apart, you know, as you say, through no fault of their own, but they do, and often you'll find the family, the natural family of the kids you've got are not that keen on the fact that you've got them, and that can be difficult, and it's stressful, and there's no end of reasons why it's difficult. So it's all worth it as far as you're concerned, clearly.
Someone's got to give these children a chance, and the parents. It is nice to see. We do have issues, maybe with the parents or relatives of the children we've got in our care, but generally, nine and a half times out of ten, we will win them round, and they'll come round to our point of view and see that we're doing the best for them. We're not grim reapers or anything like that. We're there to help as a whole and help everybody.
You've got two children of your own. They're teenagers now, but you've actually fostered children throughout their lives. Tell me about them, because they're missing out, surely, on a bit of mum and dad, because mum and dad are always, you know, focused on these, you know, other children who come into the house who need so much.
No, I think my daughter knocked it on the head last night. She said to yourself that she's been around fostering since she was born. We were fostering actually before she was born, and she's grown up with it.
She said she's not going to do it herself, though.
No. They are a massive part of fostering children. Who foster are a massive part. Any foster care will tell you about their own children. They play a massive part in ours. They look after them. One of the children absolutely loves my son for some reason all the time. No matter what child we have come in our care, it's him. No matter how much time my wife or myself spend with the children,
they always go for your boy.
And he's never there.
Miriam is from Bracknell, one of several listeners who already contacted the Peach Show to join the debate about fostering and about children in care, and Miriam's with us. Hi, Miriam.
Hello.
So tell me about how you became a foster parent. How did you get into this, Miriam?
Well, we had one child of our own, and I didn't want to give birth to any more children. I wanted to help someone else who hadn't got parents or a child who was in difficulties. So in our church, there was a meeting with social workers, and they were asking for foster parents. We were in Oxford at the time, and we volunteered. And then we moved to Berkshire, and we found a young lad in a children's home.
Right. And so you found him in a children's home. Tell us more about how that happened.
Well, actually, again, it was through our church. My mother and father-in-law were in the Slough Seventh-day Adventist Church, and some friends of ours brought this little lad to church with them, and it transpired that he was in a children's home in Maidenhead. And we asked about him, because we were already registered as foster parents and we were looking for a child, and it transpired that he was about to be considered for fostering, and it all went from there.
Tell me about meeting. We're going to talk to John in a second, your foster son. Tell me about meeting John for the first time.
Ooh, I can't really remember what we did, but I remember that we took him out for a day. We took him, I think, to the Ideal Home exhibition or somewhere, and we just fell in love with him. Oh, I guess we saw him in church for the first time, actually. And, yeah, we just fell in love with him. He was a gorgeous little boy. And we wanted him to join our family and be part of our family.
We've got John on the line. Hi, John.
Hi.
What do you remember about being in the home, first of all?
Right. The early childhood, I seem to have blacked out mostly because it was difficult time. So before the age of eight, I don't really remember much apart from what family and friends have said.
Mm. And what do you remember about moving into Miriam's house and living with Miriam's family?
Right. I remember we got on really quite well, and I settled in, but there was one issue which had come up, which I hadn't been mentioning, was at the time we weren't aware that I was Asperger syndrome autistic, mm-hmm. but later it was discovered, and I couldn't recognise what love was, and the foster parents had said, oh, you're fostered, etc., and they said, oh, the council pay us so much to have you.
So you thought Miriam wanted you because there was money in it?
Yes, because being very young and they saying that it was a large amount, that sounded a fortune to me.
Yeah.
It was only when I then moved out that I then discovered that what my foster parents were being paid was not enough to support me.
Did he ever say that to you, Miriam? Did he ever ask you about, you know, why you wanted him and whether it was for the cash?
No, he didn't say anything about it at all. And I don't remember having told him about the money. I thought, you know, that he'd just heard it from somewhere else when he eventually did tell me. And if he had told me, I would have explained to him. But we absolutely loved him to bits and considered, you know, our daughter and they were our children.
Did you have this desire we're talking about this morning, John, to find your biological mum?
Right. The biological mum was a member of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, and we were living around the Bracknell area later, because the foster parents had moved, And Newbold College, which is the pastor training college for the Seventh-day Adventist Church, would have graduation, which was the social event for Seventh-day Adventists. So it was agreed that it would be a neutral area for where I could meet my real mum. So it wasn't a case I actually had to go looking for her.
Mm.
Social services, my foster parents, etc., had all agreed that I could have contact from the real mum as long as it was on the neutral area, because social services were recommending against her knowing where I actually live.
And how did that feel to you, Miriam? The idea that there was, always there's another mum, isn't there?
Oh, that was fine with me. I made friends with her. She had mental health issues, and that's why she had to give up John. But I've kept in touch with her, and we're still good friends. I write to her in as much as she is able to communicate. I keep in touch with her and have kept in touch with her. Even when we've lost contact, I've found her again over the years.
How often do you see Miriam now, John? Because you're a grown man now, 42 years old. How often do you see Miriam, your foster mum?
Until they just very recently moved to Wales, I was seeing them about once a week because mum was providing transport over to church.
And does it still feel to you like, John is on an equal footing with your own daughter, Miriam?
Yes, yeah, he's our family. still, people have said to me, "Oh, but I thought you had a daughter, and how come John is older than her?" You know, so I have to explain to them after all these years. Oh well, he was my foster son, you know. But they're brother and sister. We brought them up as brother and sister. We paid for both of them to go to private school, to a church school, and we treated them equally. But I would have explained all that in more depth to John if I'd known that he was worried about it at the time.
Miriam, John, thank you very much indeed for joining us. It's BBC Radio Berkshire with Andrew Peach. One of the challenges that's really coming out of our work with children in care is this question of identity. If you're taken away from your birth parents, you start a new life in a home or with foster parents, maybe even get adopted, but there is this sort of nagging thing about who you really are. We've got James Howard from Caversham in the studio. James went into care in a children's home before being adopted, and then went through, great lengths, I think it's fair to say, to track down his birth family. Morning to you, James.
Hi.
Good to have you with us. Give us the sense of what that felt like. You're living in a home, you're living with foster parents, you're being adopted, but there's always this kind of missing piece of the jigsaw by the sound of it.
I have to say, Andrew, that I was 6 weeks old when I moved with my adoptive parents, who I do very much see as my mum and dad, because that's all I knew. And I never remember being told that I was adopted. It was, again, something I always knew, which I think is a good thing, because I think it would be a bit of a shock if you were 18 and it was announced. And to be quite frank, I was never that fussed. And it was only when my daughter, who was about 14 at the time, said, find your mum, find out who your original mum was, that I Googled it on the internet, the name of the adoption agency.
Tell me why, though, because, six weeks old, so yeah. Clearly you've got no relationship other than with the people who have actually raised you. So you think of as being your mum and dad. And yet, there's something in you that says, yeah, but actually, there are other people in this story too, and I need to know about them.
I suppose it's always the kind of the lure of the mystery. But what I would do is warn people that if you are adopted and thinking of finding your original parents, be very, very careful, because the chances are people haven't had a child going to adoption because they can keep them. And you could be the result of incest or rape or who knows what. I was very fortunate.
You might not like what you find, in other
Absolutely.
Words. You might be and more troubled by the knowledge than not knowing.
Kind of Pandora's box.
What did you find yourself? What was the story?
I found my mother and some stepbrothers and sisters in Dublin, and her story was that she was 16 at the time, and Ireland being Ireland, she went on holiday to Birmingham for a year, and I was the result. And when I went back, they had bunting up in the street, and it was all very positive, but that was complete chance, because it might not have been. And I would really say to people, be very, very careful. And I believe that if you want to find your original parents, you're supposed to have sort of counselling, which I think is a good idea, because if you're imagining it's all going to be kind of green fields and meadows and everything's going to be wonderful, you might be in for a hell of a shock.
Well, it's almost inevitably not going to be that, you know, because for you to have ended up in care. We heard from Frank, who rang the show yesterday, talking about, you know, his experience growing up in care, making it even now as a guy in his 60s, I think, hard to form relationships, hard to feel any relationships ever going to be permanent. Do you have that?
Yeah, but I think it's because I'm lazy.
Uh-huh.
I don't know, because, I mean, I don't know any different. And when I was, say, at school, I had friends who said, oh, I wish I was adopted, because you go to people who really want kids and they get checked out. I don't know about the relationship thing. I think there's so many
Do you feel
factors.
Damaged? I mean, I suppose we're really asking, isn't it? Do you feel damaged by the fact that you had this start in life, which is different from most people's?
I don't, no, personally, because I don't remember it for a start. And meeting my step brothers and sisters in Dublin, some of whom had been in care homes rather than sort of fostered by good people, they'd also got stories of abuse and some quite nasty things. So I was very, very fortunate.
One of the lucky ones. James, thank you very much indeed for telling us your story. Things like football are real levelers, aren't they? So I guess when you have, you know, young people come into the house, that's the kind of thing you can start talking to them about to sort of break down barriers and, you know, make them realise you're a decent guy.
Yeah, the young fella we've got now is quite into football. He's out in the garden all the time with the ball. I was hoping to get him to Wembley, but obviously all the tickets are gone. We'll take him to Reading when we're in the Premiership next year.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. But, I mean, yeah, I guess you just develop a skill as a foster parent to kind of know what's going to unlock a child. You've got, you know, a two-year-old Catherine, four-year-old Ben at the moment, and they're clearly going to be nervous to arrive in a stranger's house. They don't know you from Adam. They've had bad experiences.
Yeah, we try to make it a fun house. You know, it's a lot of laughter goes on, a lot of messing around.
Spaghetti bolognese was good as well.
Yes, yes.
Food was good, I can vouch for that.
A lot of it went over the floor, and that was from Andrew.
It was just from me.
it is fun. You just try and give them boundaries. And a lot of children, I feel, and my wife feel, do respond to boundaries. And the play inside of it, as I say, my son and daughter, they play with them a lot. We're out in the garden, we try and take them on activities, clubs after school, so it's like bringing up my own children.
Like everything is, I suppose it all comes with practice, doesn't it, really? But just watching you guys in action last night, you and Vicky and your own children as well, your teenage children as well, looking after these two little ones who have barely, you know, been in your house only a short period of time, a few weeks. You're brilliant with them. I'm now taking notes, thinking, please, can you come and sort mine out?
But it's just something we've developed over the years, and it's just natural to us. We don't want no medals for it.
Do you ever get fed up, though? Do you ever think of...
On the odd occasion, when you're awake at 2 o'clock in the morning with someone singing in their cot and whatever you do. But you've got to take the rough with the smooth. And if some people don't give these children a chance, who's going to?
Frank in Reading has texted, and I'm going to read out Frank's text and let you respond to it, Steve. Frank says, I just don't understand why people who can have children of their own want other people's children. It must be for the wage packet. After all, they wouldn't do it for nothing, would they?
Well, it's not for the wage packet, and I'll leave it at that. Frank, we've made a difference to a lot of children, and it's as simple as that, I'm afraid.
Let's talk to someone who's been involved in projects like this on the station in the past, and has been involved in this one too, Handle With Care, Polly Faulkner from Reading, with me in the studio. Morning, Polly.
Morning, Andrew.
I knew you'd show up eventually. you know how hard it can be for a foster child who doesn't really know the full story of themselves, you know, their own birth, their early life, because you fostered a little boy from the age of four, didn't you? Tell
That's
us a bit more
right.
about your story as a foster mum.
Yeah, no, my son came to us when he was four, and he left us when he was 12. So that was really hard, because we've had him for a very long time. And the intention was for him to stay longer, but there were a change of circumstances, and he also, we recognised that he had very complex needs. And the authorities have to do what they feel is in the best interest of the child, which is hard for us, hard for him, but we have regular contact with him.
Right. I mean, that's interesting, the business about the authorities and their involvement. Yeah. Are you impressed? You know, I asked both of you this in a way, but Polly, are you impressed by the dealings you've had with people involved in social work? Do you think they are doing the right things by these children? They do make good decisions about them.
I think that they try their best. I think that you're not always going to agree. For me, for my family, it was a wrench, and for my son Luke, it was a wrench to move him. But we understood why they felt they needed to change his circumstances. One of the difficulties with it, though, is that he had several social workers in the 6 years.
Oh, that's what I'm hearing every time I ask. So, you know, the fact that social workers' hearts in the right places, but they get changed around an awful lot.
They keep getting changed, and you just get the sense of they don't really know him enough. And sometimes you feel they don't know him enough to make the big decisions that they have to make. But they have a responsibility. They are the corporate parent, and I wouldn't want their job.
So, I mean, the little boy that you had, mum from Jamaica, dad that's from right. somewhere in the Caribbean, that's pretty much all he knew.
That's all he knew. And all he wanted to know, it was really strange, when he was five, he actually said, "Mum, do you think I look like my dad?" And that was huge for him. Do you think I look like my dad? I know what my mum looks like, my birth mum, but do I look like my dad?
What did you say?
And I said, well, we don't know, but we are trying to track your dad down, and the authorities are still trying to track his dad down, and he's nearly 13. All he wants to know is, where does my dad come from? You know, they think he came from the Caribbean. Do I look like him? Recently, he met his birth grandmother in Jamaica. He was taken there by the family that looks after him now.
Do you have some insight into why it's so important for this boy and a lot of people growing up in this sort of circumstance to trace the people who let them down, in many cases, originally?
I think so. I think that even as a young child, you have questions. I think, you know, you want to know. He understood that his birth mother wasn't able to look after him, and he understood that in very simple terms. And I've no doubt in 3 years' time, he'll want more information about that. But for him, you know, he could see that our birth children looked like their dad or looked like their mum. He could hear them talking about their grandparents and their great-grandparents and the places they'd visited with them. And he wanted a sense of that sense of belonging. When his birth grandfather died, he was sent a photograph of him, and he looked a lot like him, and he was so excited to have a photograph of this man that had passed away. He said, "I look like this man."
This is a, you know, sense of belonging,
absolutely.
Identity, or, you know, roots, all of that stuff.
But I think we all want to know where we came from.
Well, most of us just do, don't we? So
yeah,
for most of us, you know, we don't understand how important that is, because it's just kind of there, and it's, you know, the knowledge is never questioned.
But knowing that you might never know is difficult.
Do you get this, Steve, with the children who come into your house, that they, you know, how they feel about their birth families, their natural families?
They do ask about them, and we always talk about them, what information we have got. But we also do life storybooks for the children as they go up, so photographs of with their parents when they're having contact, so they've got something to move on with. So nobody's trying to hide anything. Even children who have been adopted, who we've had for 2 years maybe, have had a photograph from a week old all the way through, with where they've been, who it is, who they've grown up to. And when the time is right, the adoptive parents can pass that book down to them, so they've got...
They get to keep their toys as well, don't they? I thought this was interesting.
Yes.
So when, you know, any toys that a child has had while they've been with you, when they move on from you into whatever, adoptive parents, back to their own family, they get to take their toys, because these are kids who are constantly used to having everything taken off them.
Yeah, we've got a massive network of good friends who support us in fostering. And when they've got toys which come up, they're not after charity. They buy new stuff and everything, but we do get through a tremendous amount of scooters and bikes.
Hmm.
And they take everything with them as they go.
You know what I did after enjoying your hospitality last night and left you put the kids to bed? You know what I did? went home, me and the missus spent the evening sorting out stuff we're going to give you.
Sorting out toys and clothes
and all that kind of stuff that, you know, we need to get rid of because our kids are grown out of. And we have been kind of thinking, you know, who can we give this to? Yeah. And you know what? The answer is you guys. We'll be turning up with a Pantechnicon at some point in the next few days. Go on, Polly.
I was going to say, it's not just the toys, though, because our son came to us with things like birthday cards. Now, his birthday cards were always 6 months late because he wasn't allowed contact with his birth mother on special occasions. So what she did was send everything 6 months late, Christmas cards, birthday cards.
I'm going to talk to Charlene now in Benson. Hi, Charlene.
Hello.
Hi, Steve's smiling here because you're Steve's cousin, yeah?
Kind of, yeah.
Tell me a little bit about your story because you were adopted.
I was adopted at 2.5. My birth mother gave me up for adoption. But I was listening to a guy on the radio earlier that said, you know, when he was 42 or whatever, he wanted to find his parents. But my view is I've got a 2.5-year-old daughter and she's got her own character. She's brilliant. And I can't understand myself when a child gets to that stage, why put them up for adoption then?
Right. So
my view is why should I find somebody or be bothered about somebody who rejected me? When, you know, you always hear about children finding their parents when it's the parents that gave the children up. So really, I think it should be the other way around.
It would be the parents after the children. And I think there's a real logic to to your standpoint to say, well, you know what, you didn't want me, I don't want you. But somehow, not everyone feels like that. People are just different, I suppose, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, people have different views. As you said earlier, it depends on the circumstances. I got a letter when I was 5 years old that said, and I got a letter when I was born that sort of said why I was given up. You know, she was young and that. But I also got a letter when I was 5 that said that she'd had 2 more children, which she has.
What do you make of what Steve does?
I think it's absolutely brilliant.
Down the road in Reading with the children, you know, in and out of the house like Piccadilly Station.
Yeah, they're crazy. They're absolutely brilliant, the whole family.
Good stuff. Good to have you listening to the show this morning, Charlene. I don't think Steve was expecting you.
No, I don't think he was.
Thanks very much. More of Jade's story now. When you were listening a few minutes ago, we heard about Jade going into care after her mum died when she was 14. She lived with foster parents for 3 months before she went to live with her dad. That didn't work out, back into foster care. And now she's been telling me she really struggles to put down roots. I asked her if the instability during those young teenage years has made her a tougher person.
Well, it does on the outside, just not on the inside.
No, well, that's exactly it. What does it do on the inside?
Well, it just kind of it does make you stronger, like you said, but then at other times you sit there and think, what did I do wrong to make it go wrong, and how could I have done to make it go right, and you sit there and go through all these different scenarios where you could have made it better, where it could actually work out, and it's just, well, I must have done something wrong for it to break down, and it wouldn't break down otherwise, and...
So there's a lot of sort of soul-searching about whether the things that have happened to you are basically your fault.
Yeah.
Do you think they are?
Well, I didn't at first, but then everyone sits there and goes, it's your fault, you could have done so-and-so to make it different. And
who says that? Who?
Oh, well, all my so-called friends, shall I say. But now they're not my friends anymore. I just kind of told them to go and do their own thing, and I'll go and do mine. My family sat there and always blame me for stuff, even though I'm not usually when it happens. And so in the end, you start, when they sit there and say it over and over and over again, you just sit there and kind of believe them and then start sitting there blaming yourself.
And how, I mean, your family clearly have pushed you away, and I don't know whether you played a part in that or not, but how do you feel about that, the sort of sense of your own family are not that fussed?
Well, they are, because even though they pushed me away, but they're still there when they want something from me. So basically, they're just sitting there using me, and I just didn't really think family were like that, really.
I mean, looking back on the childhood you've had with some awful experiences, with your mum dying, with the sort of relationships with your family, what are the happiest memories you've got of your childhood?
We used to go away on holiday quite a lot and live by the sea. Go to the seaside like every weekend, and I love the sea. Mm-hmm. It makes me feel at home and relaxed when I'm by the water. So we did have happy times. We used to go away quite a lot, and when my mum was having a good day, she was all loving and caring, and
Do you have happy memories of the times with your foster parents?
Of course. Sometimes there was unhappy ones, but there was good ones as well. One in particular, got passed through school, got 5 GCSEs, and got into college, so it took me to Egypt.
Uh-huh, you went to Egypt.
I did indeed.
As a treat, a reward for your efforts.
I did.
And I mean, you just tell you, big smile on your face, you know, looking back now on those, just like the happiest thing.
We just did quite a lot of things together, which is what I wished it was like with my real family.
Have social services been a help to you through all of this? What do you think about social workers who've been involved in your life?
Well, they have, but sometimes you can sit there and you feel like they should do more instead of... Because my social worker at the moment, I feel like she only does half a week because she's never there. And when she is there, we make appointments to see each other and she always ends up cancelling, saying she's ill or she's busy and that. And social services shouldn't really be like that. If you have an appointment with your social worker, they should stick to it and you should actually have your social worker.
So you've got a sort of sense that they're, you know, decent people trying to do a good job, but getting to see them is a problem.
Yeah.
I mean, sitting here talking now, how do you feel about life? Are you excited about life? Are you positive about life?
Well, it all depends, really. Sometimes I'm in a low mood and it's like, is this really my life? Could there be something that I could have done to make it better and things like that? But then I would sit there and think as well, I am where I am for the choices I made. And if the choices I never made, then I wouldn't be here today.
What do you want to go on and do in work, in life, in
family? I want to work with the elderly.
Okay.
I want to foster as well because I've been into foster care, so I want to give something back because I know how it is and know how the system works. And
so you're a foster mum of the future?
I am indeed.
Back to where we started, you see, with Jade, being fostered herself, understands how the whole thing works. Now she's going to go on to be a foster mum too. Not unlike yourself, Steve.
No, very much like myself. You go for it, girl.
Final question for you is, what's for tea tonight?
You're not coming.
I'll be coming around again later.
Try and eat the food and not throw it around.
I'm really, really grateful for you to invite me into your house and to come this morning. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Polly.
You're welcome.
Handle with Care continues tomorrow morning at 9 on BBC Radio Berkshire, when we'll be talking a bit more about the role that social workers play in the lives of children in care in the area. More tomorrow from 9.